My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to another episode of AI Named This Show. As per usual, we're your human hosts. I'm Teja Custodi.
And I'm Tristan Jutra.
On AI Named This Show, we're decoding all the jargon around AI and keeping you up to date in the fast-moving world of artificial intelligence. So in today's episode, Tristan and I highlight more AI whoopsie-doopsies. We recap the biggest AI news from the Microsoft Surface event. We talk exciting DALL-E news. We review Bard's newest extension and more. It is a massive show. All right, Tristan, kick us off with, honestly, something I never thought I'd say to you this frequently, but more Microsoft whoopsie-doopsies?
Yeah, we talked before about how Microsoft made a whoopsie-doopsie by posting an article written by an AI that had added an Ottawa food bank to a list of must-eat destinations. This is just a little while back. Well, Microsoft is unfortunately deep in it again this past week. Former NBA player Brandon Hunter passed away unexpectedly at the young age of 42, and Microsoft's MSN news portal published a seemingly AI-generated article that read, and I quote, "Brandon Hunter, useless at 42. But the mess didn't stop there. The article went on to say that Hunter handed away after achieving vital success as a head for the Bobcats and performed in 67 video games. The post has since been taken down, but it's just another example of Microsoft seemingly not reviewing AI-generated articles. Or is that actually the case?
Because how is this even possible? Well, how are we here again?
Some organizations have automated pipelines for content, and they should have review processes, signing off on things before things go live. We know that CNET has quite a lot of AI-generated content that gets monetized by affiliate links and the like. And some AI content can be automated, or some news content can be automated with AI, such as financial results, quarterly financial results from companies, sports results, and the like. But an obituary is a next level, and it, you know, caused a bit of consternation by readers. Now, the article has since been taken down, of course, but it is available on various online archives where you can see the full horror. Here's the catch, though. I am not convinced that it's necessarily AI. When you look at the words that are being used, Hunter, initially an extremely regarded high school basketball participant in Cincinnati, achieved vital success as a head for the Bobcats, and so on. It doesn't sound like the AI that we've come to know and love over the last, you know, 10 months or so, the large language models that the public's had access to, and before that, that enterprise has had access to. This doesn't actually sound like AI to me. Do you know what it sounds like to me, Teja?
Yeah, where are you going with your conspiracy theory here, Tristan? I say blame the AI.
Well, I mean, that's a popular scapegoat nowadays. So in the world of search engine optimization, or SEO, a popular tactic for generating articles on one's website or content farm to rank well for the search engines. So people come find your stuff and then see your ads and or click on your links and so on, is to take an article and use a service called an article spinner. So you take that one source article and it could create 5 or 10 or 20 different articles that from the same original content, but that are different enough that you don't get penalized by the search engines. And so what some of them do is just use dictionary routines to replace various words with synonyms. Some of them would translate the text into another language and then back to English. Hence, various words would have been replaced with, you know, inexact replacements. And it's the same kind of gobbledygook that we are seeing here. One of the other points that sort of lends credence to the theory a little bit is it wasn't actually Microsoft that published this content. It was one of MSN's providers known as Racetrack. So MSN has syndicated content from all over the web, from tech blogs such as The Verge. Racetrack is a sports, and was actually more of like an automotive sports, like automotive racing news feed. And from what I was looking at previously, it sounded like it's from Portugal. So perhaps they are pulling in articles, translating them into, maybe it's Portuguese, and then back to English, and then you end up with the gobbledygook that we have here. Just a theory.
It is a good theory, but I will also say that where are the fact checkers? Where are the reviewers? Where are the human eyeballs?
That indeed is the larger question.
Yeah. Approving or not approving the content. And I will take what you said, but I'm going to raise you. I don't know what that means if I'm using that term right. But this isn't the only whoopsie doopsie that Microsoft had this week, believe it or not. A Microsoft AI team accidentally leaked 38 terabytes of private company data. terabytes with a T. That's, I'm going to get scientific, a lot of data. So according to a new report from cloud security company Wiz, the Microsoft AI research team accidentally leaked 38 terabytes of the company's private data. So that data included full backups of 2 employees' computers. Now, these backups contained sensitive personal data, including passwords to Microsoft services, secret keys, and more than 30,000 internal Microsoft Teams messages from more than 350 Microsoft employees. So one might find themselves asking, well, now how did this happen? Well, Microsoft's AI team uploaded a bucket of training data containing open source code and AI models for image recognition. And users who came across the GitHub repository were provided with a link from Azure, Microsoft Cloud Storage Service, in order to download the models. Seems understandable enough. One problem, the link that was provided by Microsoft's AI team gave visitors complete access to the entire Azure storage account. And not only could visitors view everything in the account, they could upload, overwrite, or delete files as well. This is
kind of like sharing a Dropbox link with someone and having the wrong permissions configured there, where you just might have, you know, maybe have certain people access, you know, as a guest, access certain folders. But as it turns out, they can crawl your entire Dropbox site and add or delete things as they see fit, right?
Correct. So it's the same as how Dropbox or Drive works with a shared access signature or SAS token, if you will. So that could have been set up with limitations to what file or files could be accessed, as you mentioned. However, this particular link was configured with full access. Now that is somebody, that's a human, I gotta say, that's gotta be a human error that screwed this up. And by the way, Tristan, this data has been exposed since 2020. So it wasn't until, what was it, like 2022, after Wiz told Microsoft about this, 2 days later, they invalidated the SAS token, and then Microsoft added, and I quote, "No customer data was exposed and no other internal services were put at risk because of this issue." Oh man, yikes.
And the AI angle there is it's all AI training data, right? Mm-hmm. So Microsoft has had It started off the week not that great with the initial obituary story, this data leak. They also had a giant Xbox-related leak where tons and tons of other data got leaked from internal Microsoft emails. So not a great week for Microsoft, at least not a great start to this current week. But things did turn around a little bit because Thursday, they had their Microsoft Surface with AI event where they unveiled all sorts of new Microsoft Surface products. And we'll probably talk about those on our other show, Momentous Live. We're here for the AI angle. And one of the things they announced was Microsoft 365 Copilot will be launching November 1st. But folks will have to pay for the AI features. Microsoft will be charging $30 per month, a premium on top of the business standard account or higher that you need, which can like double the price for a Microsoft 365 subscription for each user that would be using these tools. So Microsoft 365 Copilot is for integration into all your favorite Microsoft tools like Outlook and PowerPoint and Excel and Word. It's sort of like a really, really juiced up Clippy. Clippy's been working out for the last couple of decades, and he's back with a galaxy brain, and he can sum up documents for you, create emails using AI, generate highlights from Teams meetings, and more. So if you don't have 365 Copilot, there'll be some other similar features popping up elsewhere, but it won't have the full juiced up Clippy. I really wish they'd bring back Clippy for that. I think people are ready for it now.
If only we could have imagined what Clippy would have could have been. I don't think our brains would be able to handle it.
Well, speaking of Clippy, new version of Windows. Well, Windows 11 has been enhanced.
That's right. So this update is coming on September 26th, and it's going to include the all-new AI-powered Windows Copilot feature, including also things like a redesigned file explorer and a new Link Anywhere feature for pen users, improvements to the Paint app, and a bunch of other stuff. But let's talk about that AI-powered Copilot for just a minute. Obviously, Copilot is the big feature, I think, of this Windows 11 update because it's bringing the Bing Chat feature to the Windows 11 desktop, essentially. It's going to appear as a sidebar in Windows 11, allowing you to control settings on a PC, launch apps, or, of course, answer queries. So this is integrated, by the way, directly into the operating system. During the Surface event, Microsoft executives showed using Copilot to do things like write text messages, using data from your calendar, navigation options in Outlook, and the like. Microsoft, I really think, is like trying to carve out a new digital assistant inside Windows 11. RIP Cortana.
We hardly knew ye. Bring back Clippy. So Microsoft wasn't done just talking about Microsoft 365 Copilot and Copilot integrated into Windows 11. Microsoft is also adding DALL-E 3 to Bing Chat on the web. So Bing Chat is the supercharged version of Bing that was released earlier this year that is powered by ChatGPT, ChatGPT 4, if you like. The advantages over regular version of ChatGPT from OpenAI is that it can access web links in real time. So a little bit slower, but you get more relevant current results that way that you can be integrated in all the types of things you would normally do with ChatGPT. So now we're going to have DALL-E, which is the image generation platform. We've had Bing Image Creator, which has been a free tool available to use. It's a competitor to Stable Diffusion, Midjourney, and the like. But now we'll be able to access it right from Bing Chat using natural language. People can ask specific questions or more personalized questions to pinpoint things that suit their needs. So they are really working hand in hand with OpenAI to bring the features into the Microsoft's products. But you may be asking yourself, I thought we were only on DALL-E 2. What is this talk of DALL-E 3? Well, that was the other big announcement the day before. So on Wednesday, before Microsoft was talking about rolling DALL-E 3 into Bing Chat, OpenAI went and announced DALL-E 3 on its own. The latest version of its image synthesis model, featuring full integration with ChatGPT. So, as just mentioned, rather than having to go into a separate interface, a separate app, the idea is that you would be able to go and create your images right from within ChatGPT. So it's in research preview, but it'll be available to ChatGPT Plus, so the $20 US a month subscribers, and enterprise customers in early October. So the examples that they've been showing, which of course are heavily curated, you know, look reasonably promising. Lots of improvements when it comes to things like text. Even Midjourney has trouble with text. But the big thing is just being able to use language like a normal person and not sort of esoteric commands and requests. Like Midjourney has gotten, to really access the power of Midjourney, which is super powerful, people are adding all sorts of parameters in there now. And it's getting close to like command line territory back in the 80s with MS-DOS. So the idea is that they're taking the power of the ChatGPT large language model of GPT-4, combining it with DALL-E so that people can create images from their brain without having to learn this whole new language of the AI. And some of the comparisons from DALL-E 2 to DALL-E 3 are definitely showing progress in this realm. So it's pretty exciting times there. There's a few key things summarized very nicely by NLW on the AI breakdown. We're looking at advancements in, you know, the image generation quality, of course, the integration with ChatGPT to enhance the experience and really make it more mainstream for people. This is another step toward multimodality, whereby it's not just text, it's not just images, it's both. Someday, maybe next year, we'll be getting into video aspects of it. Like there are other tools to generate video now. That could be a thing. In original demos of GPT-4, we saw in the spring, people being able to take photos of things and having GPT be able to decode what's in the photos and work with the data in there. So that's what multimodality is all about. And then what does this mean for competitors? Midjourney's got a new version probably coming out this fall. It's this constant arms race here. But the advantage that OpenAI has is that a lot of people are already using ChatGPT. If you want to use Midjourney, you've got to go and download Discord. Now, lots of gamers are familiar with Discord, and a lot of crypto folks are familiar with Discord and other sort of niche communities, including AI. But if you want to get to the mainstream, asking people to download this, a messaging app? It's kind of like a Slack, or it's kind of like Microsoft Teams. What is this Discord thing? It's just another bit of friction, another barrier to people. So the smart money is saying that Midjourney is going to develop a native app eventually and really open things up, or perhaps even have a proper web interface. And then the other thing that's all part of this mix is, we talked about this with in the last couple of a few different episodes when talking about Andreessen and Suleiman, the competitive accelerationism. The market is driving this innovation, which is very cool for consumers and users. But then, of course, there's the safety concerns, and are we going to be able to stay ahead of those? Now, one of the things that OpenAI has said is that part of the training for DALL-E 3 is you can't generate art in the style of living artists, for example. And it won't generate things that are sort of like adult content or violent content or what have you. So they're trying to put the safeguards on there because they don't want people using their tool, their shiny, happy, consumer-facing tool, to make horrifying imagery.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Well, it's not just the safety concerns and people making horrifying images, which, I mean, I guess that's important. But also, like, what does this mean in terms of risk assessment and mitigating maybe some stereotypes around a lot of these AI-generated images that we've seen so far?
Well, that sounds like a segue almost. OpenAI hasn't just been doing DALL-E 3 this week, have they?
Oh, no, they've been busy.
OpenAI has launched a red teaming network to make its models more robust. So they've contracted a group of experts to help inform the company's AI model risk assessment and mitigation strategies. So red teaming, for those who are not aware, is when you, like, your blue team is like sort of your control team, your, you know, the good guys. The red team are the bad guys who go and try to break the things that you make. And so you hire experts to be the red team and to try to break your AI models. So OpenAI has worked with outside experts before, but the quote-unquote red teaming network helps formalize those efforts. We saw several months ago how people were quote-unquote jailbreaking ChatGPT and giving it a name like Dan, which is do anything now, and with a few codes that people figured out or few instructions, it would just basically ignore its safety rules and then just go ahead and do what you wanted. And then sometimes it would kind of wake up and go, wait, I didn't mean that. And sometimes it would even delete its responses. It'll still do that on occasion. So this whole red team idea is to help keep the guardrails on, especially as these tools become more and more mainstream.
Well, I guess all we can do is wait and see. If red teaming is going to be enough, it's a step in the right direction for sure. But you want to know what's really grinding my gears right now, Tristan?
What today?
We're like almost 20 minutes in and I haven't talked about Google yet.
Well, it's time to fix that.
It is part of my personality after all.
Sorry, was that part of your personality?
Ah, it is part of my personality. Well, Bard indeed, not to be outshone this week, but they've been slowly introducing or teasing the introduction of extensions to Google Bard. And now we've finally got access to one of the extensions, and it's a complete integration with your suite of Google apps. So I'm talking pulling real-time data from all of your Google apps, like anything in Drive. So Docs and Sheets, even your Maps, even Gmail, Lens, Google Flights, YouTube. You name it, what is basically Google owned, you're going to be able to integrate it now. It's important to note, this is opt-in. It is an extension that you opt into, and it's obviously very much using your personal data to do this. There's a lot of practical applications of this. You can use it for personalized responses. So as an example, Bard can help you draft a cover letter based on work experience listed in your resume, as an example. I've also seen examples where it's writing resumes for you right in Bard based on your experience. You know, search in Gmail has always been pretty good, I think, but this is another way now, like right in Bard, you could have it search for you based on, if you have a bad memory like me, what little you remember. So sometimes when you're in these systems, like a Gmail, trying to search for stuff, things go a little bit wonky when you're like, oh, shoot, what year was that? Who were all the people I was with? Like, what email address or name? And so this can kind of help that if you're like, what year did I take a picture at Ponte Vecchio Bridge in Florence or something like that? It's going to help you because it's pulling directly from your Gmail with this extension.
And you're just accessing this with natural language queries.
Correct. Brilliant. Correct. So it's obviously a lot more user-friendly, a lot easier, acts as a huge time saver. But what I really want to make sure people know is that because this is an opt-in feature, so you don't have to do it, but you are allowing Bard to access your personal Google data. So that's everything, like we said, you know, emails, photos, calendar entries, you name it. So you have to decide what you're comfortable with as a user here. Now, Google is pledging that this data will not be seen by human reviewers at the company. It will not be used to show ads, and it will not be used to train the Bard model. This is if we trust almighty Google with what they're saying. So just, that's my little caveat. You will do what you're comfortable with. Will I try this? Absolutely. And I will report back to you. It's been a busy week, in case you can't tell by all the news in our show today. So I haven't had time to try it yet, but will I at least temporarily give them access to my whole life? Yeah. I mean, they basically already do. It runs my life. Are you going to try it?
No, I don't even use Gmail, so that's a hard pass for me. However,
and this was the last episode. It's been really nice knowing you.
Because hell hath frozen over, I will probably actually be more likely to give the Microsoft 365 Copilot a try. Because, well, sorry, and this all seems a little strange coming from someone who switched to the Mac in 1996, and back in the 90s as a, you know, a 20-year-old that knew everything, was kind of like anti-Microsoft, and Microsoft was getting taken to the cleaners by the U.S. Department of Justice with antitrust trials and whatnot. It's like, ha-ha, serves them right. And then as time has gone on and Microsoft has been chastened and they kind of missed the mobile wave, and there's a few things that they've been playing catch-up on. They finally got their act together. Satya Nadella has been a great CEO, but the competition is really heating up between Microsoft and Google and Apple and Amazon. Like, all these different things are going on now. And of course, this next wave being AI, they're trying to figure out how to use all the AI research they've been doing for years and years to let people access their own data in ways to help make them more productive. And two thumbs up for that. So I'll be testing it out on the business side, because we use Microsoft 365 for our company's infrastructure, and at least it's contained. I try to keep things pretty compartmentalized between work and personal. Now we're all waiting to see what Apple does in this realm. Apparently there has been reports of Apple spending millions and millions of dollars a month on training their own internal models, because like Clippy, we're just hoping that, and someday Siri's going to get smarter, right?
Oh, please. It's time for
an upgrade there. But imagine if we could have the kind of conversations that we're having in text form with things like ChatGPT and Google Bard. But if you could just be speaking it, having the real-time transcription, the speech to text, and then it giving you an answer via text to speech, we're getting closer to that Star Trek future where we're just having actual real-time conversations with the ship's computer.
Well, as I dream of that day in the not too distant future, I want to very quickly switch gears to something I know you care so much about, and that is TikTok. Now listen.
Pass.
Pass. I don't either, but when it comes to AI, all I can say is I'm doing my due diligence. I'm giving the people what they need to know. And what they need to know is TikTok is now going to let creators label their AI-generated content. Hallelujah. Amen. I've told you how I've seen this on Instagram, where a lot of users are using AI-generated voice content. So like making up songs from other artists like Taylor Swift or The Weeknd or something like that. And a lot of the content is not labeled. So if you didn't know the artist or know what they sing, it's kind of freaking me out. So this is, I think, a really good step in the right direction. So they're going to be able to label anything that has been completely generated by AI or even edited by AI, no matter where the content is sourced from. And it is not optional. So when I say they're letting creators, they're telling them that they have to do this. So a recent company policy clearly states that any AI-generated content that contains, quote, realistic images, audio, or video must be labeled as such to help viewers contextualize the situation and prevent the potential spread of misleading content. And as this is happening, TikTok is also working on an algorithm to automatically label AI-generated posts as well. And I'm going to assume there's going to be some other reporting maybe that happens also on the back end, where if a user sees content that they believe is AI generated, they could probably report that as well. But you know what they say about making assumptions. It's my expertise.
I guess there's a few questions here. One is, will people comply? Two is, the algorithmic methods of detecting AI-generated content, will they actually work? We saw with the introduction of ChatGPT, some tools that came out to help people detect AI-generated content, and they had wildly differing results. Some seemed to work okay. Some had false positives. Some had false negatives. OpenAI even released their own tool for checking ChatGPT's output, and even it could not get a reliable hit rate. So now we're expecting algorithms to be able to detect audio and video content that is AI generated. I'm not confident. I mean, they'll probably get some of the obvious stuff, but I'm not confident it's going to do a great job if they're even having so much trouble with text. Now, the last point you mentioned were the user reporting tool. I think, you know, people are happy to narc on each other, and then I assume they'll have a review process. We'll see if it's as transparent as YouTube's is.
Well, that's what I was just going to add too, is not just users narking, but basing off an algorithm, like what's going to be their check and balance, essentially. What power does the user have if they think something is erroneously flagged? And if they say, this wasn't generated by AI, I made this. How are we going to determine it? Who's going to be right in the end? Is it going to be TikTok or is it going to be the user?
And no matter what you think of TikTok, this is just another example of AI tools getting into all sorts of stuff that we're using on a day-to-day basis. We've talked about Google Workspace. We're talking about Microsoft 365. You've got tools like Grammarly with their Grammarly Go with AI tools. Notion, Notion has their Notion AI now, which people use. AI is everywhere. And now it's even in TikTok.
And it's even in this show. Believe it or not, who would have thought?
I named it.
I know, right? So listen, Tristan, you mentioned tools and you have teased me with this tool, this translation, AI translation tool that you started playing with this week. I think that we're probably going to have some type of new segment at some point where we talk about helpful AI tools or whatever. And I don't know what that would be called yet. Maybe somebody listening could tell us what you would call a segment on AI tools.
Speaking of tools, maybe we'll call it that.
Yeah, right. Speaking of tool, AI named this tool. AI named this segment. We don't know. We're out of ideas.
We're a month in and we're out of ideas.
Right. Perfect. And it's been a great run. I'll see you later. It's been really nice having this time with you. But what the heck is this tool that you have been teasing me with this past week? What is going on?
Well, something called HeyGen, which is an AI spokesperson video creator. This is kind of lives in the same world as tools like Synthesia, which we've been experimenting with at our company, limestonelearning.com, for generating off-the-shelf representatives for leading e-learning courses or other types of applications, presentations, customer service, and the like. And HeyGen takes it a slightly different direction, whereby you can upload video of yourself speaking, and you have to give it, you know, a sample of, I think it's at least 30 seconds, and then you can have it translate your speech into the language of your choice, such as Spanish, French, Hindi, Italian, German, Polish, Portuguese, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Turkish, and Korean.
So wait, is this just like a bad dub, or like how it's translating like with our voice as well?
Not only is it translating what you're saying, it's regenerating the vocal track in that language using your voice. So it's using your voice print, and it's that same kind of voice print technology that we've seen with, you know, people doing Kanye AI covers of other songs out there. So it's your voice speaking a different language, speaking the translated text from your original video, and it's doing a little video voodoo on your mouth to make it look like you're saying those actual words. Believe it or not.
Oh my gosh.
So we're going to flood TikTok. Speaking of AI-generated content getting flagged, you can flood TikTok with multilingual versions of yourself, see if they can keep up.
Well, this is very exciting because now I can just stop all my Italian learning classes, I guess.
Exactly, because HeyGen is now speaking Italian for you. Check it out.
Benvenuti al primo episodio di questa serie chiamata AI.
Oh My
Quindi
God.
Ecco l'accordo. Alcuni pensano che l'IA salverà il mondo e alcuni pensano che la distruggerà. E qui entriamo in gioco. Siamo i tuoi ospiti. Sono Tasia Custodi.
Tristan, I can't even believe it. I cannot. Okay, this is what's happening. It's my voice. But I'm speaking, I mean, I'm assuming it's fluent Italian. I have been taking Italian for years and I'm still not great or fluent. So I'm just going to say it sounds really good. It also looks good. My mouth is, oh my God.
The results are definitely in the category of indistinguishable from magic.
Oh my gosh. Well, this is a game changer for me. I mean, for everybody, but now it's like, oh my God. I have to send this to family in Italy. They're going to think I've learned how to
Finally.
Speak. I cannot believe this. So think about like all the applications you could have with this now. Episode 5 is just going to be us speaking in Italian. And we think it's accurate. We're not sure. It sounds really good though.
Even better, you in Italian and me in French. And then...
Everybody can figure out the rest.
We're living in the future. Like, I don't even know what to say. So you can see a demo on the HeyGen's website at labs.heygen.com. There's a little demo video featuring Marques Brownlee from MKBHD. And you can give it a go yourself. There's some free stuff you can do, but then they've got some paid plans. There's limits. The clips can only be 5 minutes in length. We're going to be playing with this to see if we can use it for commercial purposes and also, you know, to do little videos to surprise our native families from our, you know, of our ancestors whose languages we never bothered to learn properly.
If you're listening and your native tongue is not English, tell us what it is and we're going to send you a video. And then you're going to tell us if it makes any sense or if it just sounds good.
We're starting our own cameo service right here. You know?
Right?
It's not just Kevin from The Office. It's these two. In whatever language you want.
I kind of want to do the clothes in Italian now, but I guess we could translate this if we want. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of AI Name This Show. Listen, because we're still new, we would absolutely love your feedback, and you can email us at feedback@ainamedthisshow.com. You can also find us anywhere you get your podcasts, so be sure to give us a follow and share this episode and rate and review this episode as well. 5 stars preferred, please. We are also on all the socials. We're at AI Named This Show on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, the platform I still call Twitter. If you may call it X. Thank you so much for joining us.
AI and goodbye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.